make sure you're in fellowship as we continue on here in the text. Laban has just laid out his prosecution, if you will, aired his grievance in regards to Jacob, all in an attempt to circumvent not treading over the line of God's words, of not trying to influence Jacob one way or the other in returning, but to do it through accusation of sin. This is all motivated and sponsored by his religious reversionism, following his STA, his sacred cows in life, the stealing of his heart equals the stealing of his daughters, equals the stealing of his gods. And that is what underwrites this whole situation and truly brings it to life and gives it substance. It's not just a little argument, pet argument, but it has spiritual ramifications that is completely and totally involved in this thing. As Jacob is growing up spiritually, he is now doing what is supposed to be done in regards to his life under God's directed will, and that is leaving Padan Aram and returning back to the land of Canaan, whereas Laban wants to return him back to his land, being out of, and keeping him out of God's directed will otherwise in that respect. All right, now in verses 31 and 32, I titled these verses, Jacob Confesses Sin and Passes Judgment. This is a kind of a rah-rah on Jacob's part in this scenario, even though it won't be the last that Laban hears from him by any stretch of the imagination. All right, looking here at the Hebrew. Then Jacob responded or answered and said to Laban, while consecutive, followed with a cow, imperfect third masculine singular verb, our word translated answered, is Anah, A-N-A-H, Jacob, proper noun, and said, sounds redundant, but is not, while consecutive, then our verb to say, cow, imperfect third masculine singular verb, Amar, Anah, Amar, A-N-A-R, to Laban, preposition lam, and followed with a proper noun. Now he confesses his sin, if you will, because I was afraid, and then he gives the cause for I said. You have the conjunction key, because, K-I-Y, followed with the cow perfect first common singular verb, yara, Y-A-R-A. I feared, because I feared. For is your conjunction key repeated. I said, who's he talking to here, himself or what? One of those little things you just ask yourself. Again, our verb, amar, cow, perfect, first common singer. Lest you would take your daughters from me by force. He had a conjunction pen, P-E-N. Lest or in case, in the event of, if you will, you might take by force, literally, yet a cow, imperfect second masculine singular verb, gadzal, G-A-T-Z-A-L. To seize is another way that can be translated by force is the best way. Your daughters, sign of direct object. Obviously, Jacob recognizes their relationship, his father-daughters, common feminine plural construct. With the second masculine singular suffix noun, bath, a word for daughters, B-A-T-H. From me is your preposition men, M-I-N, with the first common singular suffix, M, from with me, literally, I am, men plus M. Verse 32, The one with whom you find your God shall not live. That looks pretty drastic. Death penalty for stealing. The one with is your preposition imad. I-M-M-A-D. Beside me, beside with is the idea, the one with, hence. Whom is your relative pronoun asher. A-S-H-E-R. You might find, literally, is your cow and perfect second masculine singer, verb to find, matzah. M-A-T. S-A. Your gods, sign a direct object, followeth our noun for gods, common masculine plural constructed, second masculine singular suffix, Elohim, E-L-O-H-I-Y-M, obviously, little gods, his idols, teraphim, will not live, you have the negative lo, L-O, plus your verb to live, cal, imperfect, third masculine singular, kaya, C-H-A-Y-A-H. In the presence of our kinsmen, point out what is yours among my belongings and take it for yourself. In the presence of is your preposition neged, N-E-G-E-D. Literally, it means to make conspicuous, make it obvious, hence in the presence of. Our kinsmen is your noun for brothers in the Hebrew, common masculine plural construct with the first common singular suffix, ach, A-C-H, ach, that throaty sound that Hebrew has. Point out is your verb, hifil, imperative, masculine singular, nakar, N-A-K-A-R, cause to acknowledge, hence point out. For you, literally in the Hebrew, lamed, preposition lamed with the second masculine singular suffix. What is your interrogative pronoun ma, M-A-H? What is? And among my belongings, if you have among mine, literally the preposition in, again, I am, with the first common singular suffix, with me. Hence among mine, and take for yourself in the Hebrew, while conjunction, followed with the cow, imperative, masculine singular, lakak, to take, L-A-Q-A-C-H. For yourself is a preposition lamed here with the second feminine singular suffix, according to your desire. For Jacob, the narrator again informs us, for Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. While conjunction, followed with our negative lo again, L-O, plus our verb to know, discern, is cow, perfect third masculine singular, our verb yada, yada, Y-A-D-A. Now, he did not know, proper noun Jacob, conjunction key, that, K-I-Y, proper noun Rachel, had stolen them, is your typical verb, finally translated correctly. Ganab, stolen. Cal perfect third feminine singular with the third masculine plural suffix, G-A-N-A-B. All right, we're reading the two verses here. Then Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid for her, I said, in the case that you would take your daughter from me by force. Verse 32, the one with whom you find your gods shall not live. In the presence of our kinsmen, point out what is yours among my belongings and take for yourself. For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. All right, analysis of verses 31 through 32. One, Jacob's reply to Laban's onslaught here of accusation is terse. That means it's short, succinct, and effective. Two, it both defends against the character attack that Laban brought upon Jacob and usurps Laban's attempt at self-empowerment. I have the power to harm you. See? So Laban's been beating his chest, attacking Jacob's character in his accusations. And Jacob's defense defends against both situations here. Three, it turns the table, exposing Laban in the true light of his character and relegates any power of prosecution into the hands of Jacob. So, as I brought out, Laban is trying to find a legal avenue here to circumvent God's warning to him not to influence Jacob otherwise, to get him back to the land of Haran. And he attacked his character here. Jacob's defense shows Laban as the one that is devious, that is the sin type truly. And it basically usurps Laban's any claim of legal power and authority over his family, over his belongings, any aspect of his family. So for Jacob first considers all that Laban has presented, seen in the phrase, and Jacob answered, "Wow, Anah, Yaakov, Jacob." So while it seems redundant, he answered and said, we see that a lot in the Greek. The first word looks at the fact that Jacob listened intently and closely in regards to what Laban had to say, and then he mulled it over for whatever length of time here in his mind before he then stepped in and voiced his defense. So five, Jacob, reflects the believer that does not go off with retort, in other words, half-cocked, apart from deliberating the facts of argument. Whereas Laban was trying to solicit the emotions of people around him and get people to lead with their emotions, etc. Obviously, in his mind, is thinking he knows he's trying to make Jacob, if you will, mad, get under his emotions, and obviously that would facilitate his accusation of aggressiveness, you know, and things of this nature. Jacob doesn't fall for any of this. He really, here in his defense, reflects a believer that gets in fellowship and deals with this appropriately. And that is what you've got to be careful with. Often people who are argumentative, have issues, want to take issue with you, they will come in and they'll try to attack your character or whatever. And obviously the natural SCA response is immediately reply in an aggressive way back. Well, sometimes it's best just to stand back and consider it all. Maybe there is an element of truth in what somebody's saying. Who knows? You know, to think about it rather than just right off the cuff think that, you know, I have the answer here, as we would say, to you. You rhyme with the word to, you know. No, it's not that way, etc. To reflect upon things. Obviously, when you come to Bible doctrine, we're commanded in the Scripture. James tells us to not be quick to react, quick to speak, be slow to speak, quick to hear, and hence consider things. So, to me, see, all this points to this spiritual matriculation, the spiritual growth that has evolved from Jacob's eventual residence there in regards to living with his uncle Laban. And I guarantee you, he's ready to get home. He's ready to get back to God's geographical will for him in this vein. So it shows to me a sign of maturity, at least emotionally, if not spiritually. But I believe both. Yeah, people can be out of God's geographical will and grow up a little bit spiritually. Listen to tapes or whatever. But that doesn't mean that they're going to be prize contenders in that condition. Eventually, they got to line up with God's NPR for them overall. That includes his geographical will. So 6, having his thoughts together, he then addresses Laban per the phrase and said to Laban. That's your verb, Amar. Anah, Amar. Well, Amar, Lamed, Laban. Lamed, Laban. That doesn't sound Hebrew to me. Sounds like Star Trek stuff. 7. Don't mind me. Sometimes my mind wanders. But I'm still in fellowship, don't worry. 7. He first directs the attention to the core of Laban's accusations of Jacob being guilty of sin. All right, the essence and the core of Jacob's Laban's accusation toward Jacob is you're a sinner. You're evil. And, you know, again, that's the way religious reversionists often will react to a doctrinal type that they want to take issue with. And on the other end of the coin, he then turned around and tried to present himself as this righteous, compassionate father that just dearly felt cheated for his Jacob taking his family away from him, see. That's the picture that's being painted here. So Jacob, in his response to him, first deals with the accusation of sin, stolen from me. Stolen my heart. Stole my daughters. Stole my idols. You've sinned. And he first deals with the true sin. Because I was afraid. Ki yara in the Hebrew. So 8, he, that being Jacob, employs intellectual honesty here to dethrone the intellectual dishonesty personified by Laban. You've got to be intellectually honest when it comes to your life in regards to Bible doctrine. If you want to truly confront the real issues of life itself, your own life, your own person, it demands that you are intellectually honest, at least before God. Otherwise, you will run under intellectual dishonesty, rationalize the real issues, put a Band-Aid over things, over your real sicknesses spiritually, rather than deal with the actual problem and get in and take care of it, see. And here we have a contrast of Laban, who is intellectually dishonest. The hypocrisy in his words show his intellectual dishonesty, see. And he deals it with intellectual honesty, to be truthful. And in so doing, we'll see how powerful that approach is in regards to the viewpoint conflict that is being laid out for us in this scenario. So 9, he states that any sin accounted to him was not against Laban, but against God under sin fear. Yeah, you're right, I am a sinner, the legalist. But look what you did. Well, yeah. Look what your pastor done. Oh, he did this, he did that. That was a sin. Well, yeah. He'll be the first to tell you that, too. Now, how about your sin of gossip and maligning? Violating, abandoning your NPR, people blow out here, and things of that nature. You know, accusations against other believers. They did this, they did that. Well, yeah. Welcome to the real world. But the difference between us and them is we see the reality. They remain blind. They're still operating in life under the delusion that somehow now they're okay. We'll see at the Bema, will we not? So, before God, I mean, God knows everything. He sees everything. Now, what's this whole thing of trying to cover up before God? So, Jacob says, yeah, I sinned, but not in the context of your accusation. My sin is before God. So 10, Jacob's sin here was failing to faith rest once again in life, which is a dominant sin that we see among the patriarchs. Weakness in regards to their faith rest, especially within their state of immaturity. Jacob hasn't quite reached that maturity barrier yet, but he's quick on the road. So his sin is failing to faith rest once again in life. Point 10, of not trusting God in spite of how the circumstances appeared to him otherwise, which he brings out here, why he was afraid. My argument in that vein, point 11, that this is Jacob's only sin in the departure affair, as I have brought out in my interpretation, in regards to these verses, it is not a deceit against Laban. That is not his sin. His sin was simply failure to faith rest. And additional support in regards to that interpretation, point 11, that this is Jacob's only sin in the departure affair, is supported in verse 36. When under righteous indignation, he challenges Laban otherwise. After the search mission ends, nothing is found. In verse 36, Jacob unloads on Laban. It has all the ingredients of righteous indignation. Now I understand, yeah, the idols are in the possession of his, are in the company of his possessions, but he doesn't know that. He didn't steal it. And obviously, the accusation is made towards him in the household. And there, in verse 36, it begins, and Jacob became angry. It's not sin anger that I can see at this point in time, at least. It's righteous indignation. And he contended with Laban. And this is like a whole different character that we're seeing from Jacob now, whereas he's been passive throughout most of the narratives that we've seen in his history. All of a sudden, you see a different face in regards to Jacob. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, "What is my transgression? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me?" God covered his rear end like you wouldn't believe. It's really pretty cool stuff. And not that you do things to try to get away with them, but God covers the innocent. Yeah, he's got your back in your innocence. See, is the idea. So, the sin is simply the failure to faith rest, to put his trust in God. Okay, I see the demeanor, Laban, the family, he's aggressive, he's going to try to stop me. God's told me to leave. And he gets under anxiety in regards to all this. Okay, I think we've all probably been there once or twice. Under circumstances, of high pressure circumstances otherwise. But it doesn't mean that you let it rule and continue to dictate your life. Even though he's under sin fear, he still managed to obey God. Verse point 12, Jacob then states the cause for his fear. "Why was you afraid? For I said, lest you would take your daughters from me by force." The Hebrew key, Amar, Pen, Gazal, Bath, Men, M. 13, as our analysis of this chapter has previously pointed out, it was the threat of losing his family that prompted Jacob's covert exodus, any sinful acts of deceit, etc. aside. when I very first started on this, in our notes, stealing Laban's heart that didn't have anything to do with Jacob deceiving him. His real reason for leaving covertly was because he was under fear for his family otherwise. Not that sin fear was legitimate. It wasn't. It never is. So 14, now the past tense of the phrase, "for I said," that one kind of jumps out at you here. It harks back to his last conversation recorded with Rachel and Leah back in verses 5 through 13. It's not the anah verb in as we saw in responding or answering, in other words, deliberating to himself. It's the words used in verbal presentation, verbal communication. "And I said." Said to who? Well, where's the last time Jacob did any speaking? It was back with Rachel and Leah when he laid out to them the circumstances and situations in verses stated here, 5 through 13. So 15, this at least implies that he passed on his concerns to his wife at that time. With our verse now filling in the blank, he gave them all the reasons why he is innocent, that their father is emotionally unstable at the present, and God's input in regards to all this in validation consideration. But I also presented those verses in the sense that the reason why he's leaving covertly is because he felt his family was in danger, and it was the safest way to get out and get the biggest head start he could. He's heading for the hill country. That tells you that he's looking for someplace where he can defend himself, being minor, the less of the numbers in defense. You're on open plain, the larger number, army or military, is going to have an advantage. Obviously, unless you got superior weapons. But in these days, you know, you got a spear, you got a bow, and that's pretty much it. So, where's the best place to run? Someplace where you can get cover. Get behind the rocks, get up in the hills, get an advantage of high ground, things of this nature. So, his given reason for fear implies that he told his wives in that conversation at some point in time, he let them know that we're leaving covertly because I think your dad's going to try to hold us here or get you, take you by force otherwise and take you away from me. 16, otherwise he's just talking to himself. So, yeah. If you want to go that way with it, all right, I wouldn't argue that. But it just leaves it empty. So 17, now his defense for leaving in a stealthy manner changes the pictures of Laban's innuendos that Jacob was aggressive in nature. So actually leaving and the reason why he left now flips the coin, so to speak, putting the aggressive facade back on Laban's shoulders versus the innuendo that Jacob was the aggressive one that we dealt with here in these verses. What have you done by deceiving me and carrying away my daughters like captives of the sword? The fact that Laban has rounded up all of his relatives to support him returning his daughters places the weight of truth as to the aggressor right on Laban's shoulders. This statement has witness built into it. It has circumstantial evidence that you can hardly look past. What are you doing here with an army? You're the one who is aggressive. You're so concerned, family so much, means so much to you. Why didn't you just come in and find me and tell me yourself? No, you came with an intent. An intent to do me harm. Just like you said you could. So, this is pretty cool. Jacob is seeing through all this. And because he's being honest and open. And he's in fellowship. I mean, he's confessed. He did it verbally. Then the right things come out of his mouth that defends him, if you will, in a righteous way before all concerned. So 19, Jacob's confession here starts peeling away the layers of hypocrisy and intellectual dishonesty of Laban. And by application, following his confession, I just note rebound counsels or neutralizes and rejects both hypocrisy and intellectual dishonesty. When you rebound, you erase any hypocrisy in your life. You're not trying to hide anything. You're not trying to be something that you're not. You recognize you for what you are. And you're being intellectually honest before God. It shows the power of intellectual honesty. Residing with a believer, willing to acknowledge true sin, as they may be up against a facade of some religious reversionists running under self-righteousness. Don't let the legalists, the self-righteous types, get under your skin in their accusations. Just be honest. Yeah, I'm not perfect, but neither are you. See? Neither are you. And an open admittance of that really puts you in the upper hand in regards to that which would be considered honest, fair, and open, and objective in regards to the whole conversation. Maybe you've been there in situations. All right, you're right. Well, most often, that just simply diffuses things, if anything else, see. But the religious reversionists, see, they're running under the misconceptions of their human viewpoint, their religiosity, that which they think to be right before God. When they do so, they operate under self-righteousness. Whether it's through legalism or liberalism, it's their own form of righteousness. We ascribe to one type of righteousness, that's absolute righteousness, and that demands intellectual honesty and openness in regards to our sin and our life. So, take it for what it's worth if you're ever in that situation, if you've not been before. And here we're seeing the power of the positive, intellectually honest person as it confronts the self-righteous hypocrite that otherwise is making these accusations against him. 21, to follow up on the previous point, the religious reversionist dismisses the presence of personal sin in life to the degree they pursue their doctrine of demons. If you believe one way, then you're going to, and it's in contradiction to God's plan, then obviously you dismiss that part of God's plan. And that's what religious reversionism does. It compromises doctrine. It replaces it with one's own human viewpoint, with one's own sacred cow of thinking. And they dismiss personal sin. Again, like I said, the legalistic background I came out of, they only saw the sins as the big sins. They don't even consider mental attitude sins. I first got on doctrine, and I had it out with my parents. We all raised in the same denomination, and they're hell-bent on that's the way it's supposed to be in life and all these other things. And I said, nobody is perfect. And, well, you mean to tell me your pastor's not perfect, you know? Pastor that I had then, which is one a man that I held very dearly. Kid and I, we went in basic training together and all these other things. And you got to take into account mental attitude sins, even though I have not even heard him say or heard of anything overtly. And of course, everybody blew up. I said, you just proved my point. Anger. And then they go on living in life, trying to think that they're going to reach some type of righteous perfection in life. And one of the spouses, ends up being really mean-spirited, etc. And the other spouse is going, maybe he is right, because they don't want to deny they're not believers. Anyway, again, don't mind me when I reminisce. The religious reversionist, point 21, dismisses the presence of personal sin in the life. They avoid it. They don't generally regard it. They don't deal with it, especially fastidiously, as the adjusted positive believer. To the degree they pursue their doctrine of demons. Understand, that's what it is. Doctrine of demons. I don't care what kind of icing they try to put on it with the Bible. It's still doctrine of demons. So 22, so Jacob's initial response here directs the blame of sin to its appropriate categories. Sin, fear, not stealing or deceit, in Laban's mind. And then guilty parties. The guilty party is the one who is going to try to keep his family in spite of what God's directed will was for him. You may say, well, Laban didn't know God had spoke to him at that point in time. It's none of his business. He didn't need to know. And Jacob didn't need to tell him. All Jacob had to do was do what God told him to do. And that's what he did. See? 23, now that Jacob iterates here that his wives would be removed, quote, by force, end quote, further clears the air as whose authority they were under. That is, their husband, not their father. If Laban was going to take them by force, that means that he was usurping or trying to overtake Jacob's authority in regards to them being his property or his possession as wives. See. So now we see how he takes this argument and Laban beating his chest in regards to the power that he has, and he truly now is putting it under the doctrinal perspective in regards to whose authority they belong to, and who the one would be the one kidnapping in this case. So 24, while Rachel and Leah may still be Laban's daughters, genetically, Laban gave up any parental authority when he sold them to Jacob. Now, I've seen the arguments, some commentaries, that, Jacob was living there with Laban, so Jacob was on Laban's authority. That's really moot in this case. Doesn't mean that his wives were under Laban's authority. His wives are still under his authority. Even if that was the case. But how much stock you can put in that, I don't know. He could be had his own place, just living there on the property. Obviously, it looks as if they were not living together if Laban was gone and Jacob was able to take off. Otherwise, in that situation, Ephesians 5:23. For the husband is the head of the wife. Over and out. That's the way it is. You're female, you get married to a male, you're going to have male's authority. You're no longer under the authority of your parent. No longer. And so it is in regards to Leah and Rachel and Jacob. Before God, any kidnapping on their part would have come from the father's actions, not Jacob's. The daughters did not belong to Laban anymore. He sold them. He bartered them for 14 years of labor. So 26, all these pictures, the religious reversionism is futility, if you will. Wastefulness of worshiping family quite well as it places Jacob's God in authority and power over what Laban rationalizes as his gods. That is, doctrine establishes true authority, human viewpoint aside. People may claim authority, but you have to look at it from the doctrinal perspective. That's the one with the real power before God. I don't care what man says. So, the futility of his religious reversionism comes to light quite clearly as it's seen to be worthless before God. It really advances him nowhere spiritually. 27, now in verse 32, Jacob puts on the robe as judge over the whole matter. And that's kind of in contrast to Laban saying he has power to harm him. 28, he will first pass sentence and then call the witnesses of the juries to carry out any reparations Laban has claimed due him. The sequence of events here in his words. 29, first the judgment. The one with whom you find your gods shall not live. Emad, Asher, Massah, Elohim, Lo, Kaya. 30, some interpreters question the legitimacy of the punishment of death by Jacob just for stealing. You see it as maybe words of exaggeration. Where's he really coming from? 31, however, that stealing is only the surface infraction. It's only the surface sin to steal the idols. 32, the more crucial sin is that the thief was stealing something they obviously coveted. They lusted after it for themselves, providing circumstantial evidence to their own practice in idolatry. And that is what is relegated to Rachel in regards to her own religious reversionism. She was not willing to let go of her past idolatry in her family. And hence she stole these idols for her good luck charm. And to try to hold hands with God on one hand with Jacob and still hang on to her past religious reversionism otherwise. So the real sin, the deeper sin, the bigger issue here. You steal something, okay, you recognize that, you can rebound that pretty easily. But when you're steeped in human viewpoint and religious reversionism, you remain blind to that. Think about that. Every time a religious type goes out and does something in the name of Christianity, the banner of Christ, or their local church, and it's not in line with the truth of Bible doctrine, what are they doing? It's human good. It's false. It's practicing idolatry. As light as it may be. As we've seen, these particular household idols called the teraphim in the Hebrew were also associated with divination as practiced by Laban. You have to kind of put pieces of the puzzle together throughout this section to come up with a comprehensive view of it. And we saw that as he divined in chapter 30, verse 26. Supposedly, that God had blessed him by association with Jacob. wrong one. Verse 27. But Laban said to him, "If now it pleases you, stay with me. I have divined that the Lord has left me on your account." And we looked at that word divine, and it's never used in a good sense. It's used always in conjunction with the cult or spiritism or things of that nature. Then compare 31:19, the household idols called the teraphim. So you got to put two and two together here, or one and one, wherever. 34, this practice was a contender for capital punishment under the law. To be involved in that form of idolatry, especially under the law, Mosaic law, that was punishable by death. Exodus 22:18. You shall not allow a sorceress to live. A sorceress is a medium, one who practices idolatry, seeking communication to spirits in the spirit world. And Israel, if they find that kind of practice, they find the palm readers and all these other people setting up shop in their country, they are to take them out and stone them, kill them, rather than put them on TV and advertise their wares to others. 35, and this just shows you how serious God takes the practice of religion, especially when it's kind of melded in regards to the truth of Bible doctrine in representation, such as Israel or the church, etc. So, 35, idolatry in general was grounds for national destruction and dispersion from the land. And that would mean the death upon many people, as it usually came through acts of war, etc. Israel would be kicked out of the land. That's Deuteronomy 4, 25 and 26. When you become father of children and children's children and have remained long in the land and act corruptly and make an idol in the form of anything in representation of a belief system in contradiction to especially the law and Bible doctrine. And do that which is evil in the sight of the Lord your God, so as to provoke him to anger. I call heaven and earth to witness against you today, that you shall surely perish quickly from the land where you are going over the Jordan to possess it. You shall not live long on it, but shall be utterly destroyed.
Well, looks like the death penalty to me for this kind of practice. 36, now judgment against idolatry was practiced in Job's time, which Job, by all intents and purposes, lived not long after the flood, even during the time of Noah. So even though we're not under the law, it doesn't mean that there were not doctrinal practices in place otherwise that then were culminated in the law, the Mosaic law for Israel, etc., in their dispensation. Job 31. I don't think that should be 2 through 28. Let me look here. I had in mind 26 through 28 there. If I have verse 24, that gives you, it kind of gives you the background here, the context. If I put my confidence in gold and call fine gold my trust, in other words, it becomes your God, your reliance in life. If I've gloated because my wealth was great, the arrogance that stems from religious reversionism, idolatry, things of this nature, because my hand had secured so much. See, I did it myself. Stole Laban's heart shows you that in religious reversionism, people set themselves up as their own God. They're proclaiming the truth, not God. Anyway, if I'd looked at the sun here in terms of astrology in regards to a common vice in the occultic world, if I looked at the sun when it shone or the moon getting in splendor, my heart became secretly enticed. See, within, there shows the affection in regards to getting in this type of mode of reversionism. Interesting that you had the idea of heart involved on this one too. And my hand threw a kiss from my mouth. I love you. I love Jesus. I love you, sun. I love you, moon. And that's what you're saying in regards to your sacred cows. For two, that too would have been an iniquity, calling for judgment. See, recognizing that it's bad in God's eyes, for I would have denied God above, putting that above the truth of Bible doctrine. So 37, so a sentence of death associated with this crime here centers on the spiritual realities deserving of death. Stealing is just another sin that occurred in the deeper spiritual reversionism that was involved in regards to this whole situation. So, all right, time's up. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to light and see these things in Jesus' name. Amen.